this next panel ought to be very interesting. As Artie Johnson once said on Laugh-In many years ago. Certainly, when you begin to look at corn carryout for the new season and begin to factor in the February WASD and see we're at 675 already and begin to think what could happen if we had a weather problem in corn or if demand is not front-loaded and continues to pick up in the back end, one could certainly make a case for some really ridiculously low ending stocks for new crop corn. And we've heard some allusion to that already this morning. It's our pleasure, though, to really delve into the corn issue with Dan Zwicker of ADM Grain Group in Decatur, Illinois, Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Services out of Oakland, Illinois, Pete Manhart of Base Commodities in Normal, Illinois, and Jackie Vakes of Stuart Peterson Group in Champaign, Illinois. Todd Gleason, what about corn?
Well, the question about corn is if beans are bearish, can corn actually be bullish? So let's start there, and we'll let you answer that question, and we'll take off. Dan Zwicker with ADM Grain Group.
I guess I got a couple questions I want to ask as a group. How many of you have sold corn here in the last couple weeks?
Old.
Old crop corn. How many of you made a sale in the last couple of weeks?
That's more than what I thought. How many would sell a whole bunch of new crop corn if we went 50 higher? How many would go half sold if we went 50 higher?
Hang on, they're consulting about the next question for you.
How many of you are actually in concrete on your planning decisions? We got some flexibility.
Oh, that is amazing.
That's good to see.
How many think a year from now we'll have these prices?
There's one guy in the back. Stand up. What's your name? Where are you from? Well, hold it. Before you finish up, two more questions. Since we're still asking, I need to know the difference. How many of you are farmers, and you may be landowners as well, but how many of you are farmers, actually farmers? Okay. And how many landowners, now not counting the farmers, but just landowners are in?
Okay.
We needed to know that too. You've got another question? Hang on. One moment. Yes, what's the question?
You want me to ask it? Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Brian Stark asked all of you how many of you were sitting on old crop corn. I want to know how many of you are sitting on gambling stocks, not huge amounts of old crop corn. Give a percentage?
What's a gambling stock? That's probably different. But
10% or less?
Less than 10%. Who's got just less than 10% left?
And hold it. Less than 20.
Hold it. Let's do this differently so we get better. Who's got old crop corn? Any amount. All right. That's what we needed to know. So there's a lot more out there than
what they might think.
You might think.
It's all sold?
No, that it's available to sell.
Available.
How many people have 50% or more of their old crop corn left?
Oh, no. There ain't very many of those.
40%. 30%. 20% left. 10%.
Okay.
Looks like half's got something.
So it's a low percentage.
Hang on. We'll have an answer for you momentarily. The calculators are working. We got a lot of stuff from them. God, thanks for answering the questions. We'll probably have more as the day goes on. So You actually just gathered a lot of data. Mm-hmm. What'd you think of that data? And what are you going to do about it?
What did I think of that data?
Well, yeah.
I think that
so the, it did well, one, is there more corn there in the farmer's hands than you thought?
Well, than I thought.
Yeah.
Perhaps. Perhaps. I'd have to say that I probably figured there was maybe 30% left on a lot of guys. There's less than that out here. I think the bigger question, though, isn't how much corn is out there. It's how much corn is, what price is going to make that corn available to the market. You know, let's face it, as farmers, if we make $8 corn on old crop, it's going to 10, right? And you're not selling that. You know, I mean, that's the reality of the way it is. So I think if the percentage that's there doesn't make as much of a difference as how much, when they're willing to sell.
I think it's more of what time of year it is. I mean, you know,
that's true, too.
July 1st, the weather looks good. I mean, you look.
Yeah.
So the comment about when corn comes to the market is what time of the year is it? And that's when it comes to the market.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And I think that's wrong. I think price ought to be more important than time of the year. If you can get $8 corn in November or January or May, I'd be selling it. In fact, I'd be selling all my old crop corn right now, and if I think it's going higher, I'd buy some cheap calls. Because the downside has got more potential than the upside. By July, calls. Our guys,
where'd you find the cheap calls?
We went to a meeting, and they said corn could be 10 and beans 20. But they actually said corn could be $4 to $8, and we're over 7. And beans could be 8 to 16, and we were at 14.
Right.
Yep, there's a potential for up, but the potential for down is down also.
All right.
Sell your cash, buy nearby calls on old crop.
Okay, there's one on old crop. Dan, old crop.
Well, if I remember right, a year ago we were talking $2 and that kind of stuff, weren't we?
That was the guy from Iowa.
You know what? Does anybody remember? I don't think the panel was that bearish for corn at this time.
I heard some downside price objections below $2 last year, I think. I think the corn market is definitely at a breather right now. And it is basically waiting to see what the March 31st report shows us. How much corn do we have left to finish out the next 6 months? There's a lot of people that like to put a top in the market. They would like to say that, you know, let's not take this thing any higher, because if it goes higher, it's going to totally choke demand. But nobody knows yet until we see what that March 31st report. I guess I got mixed emotions on what that report's going to show. I think there's some, one time I look at the statistics and I see how much inventory is around, it kind of tells me we might have more corn around what the market thinks. And depending upon how much of that could kill this bull market pretty quick for a couple months anyway. March reports are noted for killing the bull or starting a new one. And I think when you combine that with what April weather may or may not be at that point in time, it could get real tricky around the first part of April. So far the trend is up, nobody really wants to buy it at this point, and traders are generally scared to be short. So I think that's kind of why we're in this holding pattern. Crude oil now is at a point where I think we've lost any kind of more strength in corn. I think higher crude oil prices at this point begin to tip the scale the wrong way on corn. And I'm kind of bullish crude oil, for the simple reason crude oil's been counter-seasonal all winter. Usually crude oil declines from Labor Day into a winter low and then begins to turn up late February, early March. This year it basically went sideways higher through the winter months, and that tells me that end users don't have any length on. Farmers, transportation companies, airlines, whatever. So now with the Libya situation, here they are with no length on, so I think they're going to be wanting to buy breaks, and I think that could drive crude oil futures up to the point where it turns the economy downward. So I think that's the biggest fear that we have in the corn market. And then all of a sudden we look down the road and we don't need as big a crop for next year as what the market thinks right now. So I think there's some caution signs, but we're going to have to wait and see what we see on that March 31st report first.
The markets have opened, and we do have live quotes in the building, actually. So nearby May corn at 710 is down 7.5. December at 606.75, down 3.75. And the corn, May beans at $13.80 are off 15 cents. The November's at 13.36 1/4 are down 18.5. And wheat at 821 3/4 is down 8 3/4. Paul Cooley, an opening comment.
Hey, it's a lot of fun to be here and being up here on this distinguished panel, and we call it the late show, you know, with the group. Hey, I want to say a couple things here quick. Brian Riddle with the ADM group over there, Kathy Hanners, wave your hand, you know, a little bit. Of course, Dan Zwicker, Lucas Rooney with the insurance group, Amy Leibrandt, Attica, Scott Ashwell, Attica, Ken Lovett. He should be up here instead of me. He's an ADM.
We'll arrange for that next time around.
Corporate in the economy department. And, of course, Brad Tucker, an old cowboy from the Oakland Commodity Office. And Kay Whitlock from Graham Grain at Terre Haute. Terre Haute Grain, you're out there somewhere. And she used to be a cash grain person. And I wanted to say that these are my statements and not necessarily in agreement with ADM or ADM investors, to kind of give a footnote so I don't get fired in about 2 minutes. Hey, this is an important topic, the USDA acreage. The government said that we were going to have in their outlook meeting 3.8 million acres of corn, 0.6 million more acres of soybeans, 2.1 million acres of cotton, soft red winter wheat, 2.5 million for that 9 million, million acre advantage from last year. 3.5 million acres are coming from rice, oats, CRP, pasture, 3 million acres of double crop beans. I think the government got it wrong in soft red winter wheat. And if you haven't run a cotton picker in 2 years or 4 years, it's awful hard for me to imagine that you're going to go out and spend the money planting more cotton. I think the other thing is that I think $100 an acre advantage, I think the corn acreage is going to be higher. I know some of my panel members don't agree with me, but I think the USDA wants a lot of corn. It'll solve a lot of problems. They want a lot of corn, let the rest of the world plant the soybeans. And, of course, spring weather is a big footnote here. The spring wheat weather up in the upper Red River Valley is a big, big factor. And the last thing I'm going to say is my private meteorologist that I talk to and subscribe to say basically it's going to be a little warm-up in here and a pretty good 3 or 4 months in the growing season.
Pete?
Thanks for having us. We bring you good news from normal, I guess. On those acres that we were just talking about in corn, in our area and the people I talk to and looking at the hands out here, I disagree on the more acres than USDA. I think we'll have less. I had an awful lot of people that had poor yields, like Matt did on some of his second, third, fourth-year corn, and we have such good bean prices that they don't have the outlay for corn acres. So I think we're going to stay the same to even actually have a few more bean acres there. I think where we're going to gain corn acres is where we didn't plant wheat, where it was dry, southern Illinois, southern Indiana, and out west where it's bad when they tear up wheat. They're going to put those to corn acres. I think we'll gain corn acres there, and I think we'll lose bean acres because we don't have that second crop beans. So I don't think we're going to have as many second crop bean acres as USDA says, but I think tearing up of wheat and not getting wheat planted will allow for more corn acres. But even with huge trend line yields, our carryout is still going to be under a billion, according to that, and I think we'll be a million acres less than that.
Jackie Vakes, your opening comment?
My opening comment.
If we
I have to talk about acres? Is that what it is? Or I can
say
what I want to
say. You are free to go wherever you'd like to go.
Well, I want to cover two things. When it comes to the acres, we deal with people all over the U.S., and one of the things that we certainly believe is going to happen is bean acres are going to increase in the Dakotas. We're seeing them go away from a lot of the pinto beans and into more regular row crop beans. I think that I agree with Pete. I don't think we're going to have as many corn acres as the USDA is saying, primarily because when you look at the yield loss that we've seen on corn, and if we follow the pattern that we have in Iowa in the last 3 years, we'll probably lose another 5% of their corn on corn acres. I think it's going to be a tough haul to get the extra acres. Our guys in Kansas that are talking about ripping up wheat, it's all on dry land. So, you know, dry land corn in most years is going to produce about 70 to 90 bushel to the acre, and that's it. So on that side, but the thing I wanted to go back on my opening comment was is go back to the old crop. And, you know, we talked a little bit at the very beginning about what should determine whether you sell or you don't sell. I think what you've really got to focus on is you've got to focus on your return on investment. If you look at your whole crop, and I can tell you, I have a lot of clients that I have all their information, cost-wise. We pay them for harvesting. We pay them for planting because I believe you have to pay yourself. And when cash corn was at 521, his return on investment was 39 cents on every dollar he invested. So rather than sit and look at a futures contract price or sit and try and figure out what may or may not happen, put a pencil to what your return is. And I say this for a reason. If you're not paying attention to it, believe me, corporations are paying attention to it. And you guys have to compete with them for acres. So if you don't want to believe me, ask some of the people who sell real estate here in Illinois. I met a fellow who is a farmer and also sells real estate in November at a meeting that WILL put on. He sold $21 million worth of real estate just in November and December of last year by himself. And he said he regularly gets calls every week from index funds, large corporations, and people who want to acquire farmland. And if you heard Warren Buffett last week, he said, I'll buy all the farmland I can compared to gold. You guys need to compete with them. You have to do a good job of marketing and protect yourself. So look at that return on investment.
Okay, Cooley, I want to go back to you about this acreage thing. And I have a question, maybe a clarification. You say USDA wants more acres. The question...
Of corn.
So does that mean the 92 million that they put out in the ag form is when they come out in March, which is a survey of farmers, do you think USDA, because they want more acres, will actually show a lower acreage figure?
That's
in
the
order,
bottom line.
Is that
That's
in order to push prices higher? Is that where you're headed? All right.
I think whatever that takes, they'll fudge in the direction that it to encourage farmers to plant more acres. Yes.
I don't think we've got the high enough price either for new crop corn to get that many more acres.
Right. $6 is not high enough.
No, it's not high enough. We want $6.80. We want what we're getting for old crop corn.
I agree with Pete.
Let me go over one thing on this one. You remember we've heard this, and this is the number one question about in the last panel about, the spread between old crop and new crop's too much. There was about 14 elevators and grain companies that got into a lot of trouble that bought new crop corn and hedged it in the old. And if anything, we got cured in that bad time in 2007 and 8 was that hedge to arrive. It's two different worlds, and don't forget that one. You know, there's not enough money to bail out bad hedging, and that was one that
woke a bunch of people up.
All right. I want to go to this $6 new crop price because we're, what, at $1.04 spread or something like that at the moment. And that's narrowed down, what, in the last week, 20 cents maybe, right? 20 or 30 cents. The question really is, which way does it have to go? Does it have to? How much does it need to narrow? Should it narrow? You say $6. That's not a bad price for corn. Is there a reason that it should come up to meet the old price corn? And we'll come across the panel this way and let Dan and Paul go first, and then we'll finish with Jackie and Pete.
First thing, the market doesn't have to do anything.
No, you're right.
The biggest concern that the market's going to have to deal with is, are we going to have to ration the remaining inventories between now and September 1? And that's going to take place first. And depending upon how that unfolds, will determine whether or not we'll need a bigger crop, is what everybody thinks, next fall. Because if for some reason we go into this report and we find out we got less inventory than what people think's on the books, the odds are very good that you're going to have to spike this corn market to get somebody to cry uncle, whether it's the ethanol people, whether it's the cattle people or the hog people, or the government. And once you do that and you cut demand, that takes time for that to rebuild, and therefore you may not need as big a crop for the 2011-12 marketing year.
So in March you have to look not only at the acreage report but the quarterly grain stocks report.
I don't think acreage means anything. I think it's stocks and April 1 weather. If it's nice out, you're going to plant corn. If it's wet, then that makes old crop corn have all the more jet fuel behind it, because that means that the odds of trying to get some new crop inventory into the pipeline during August diminishes, and that will force the market to ration current inventories.
Your question, once again, is... Repeat your question.
I want to know if the spread between old and new crop is too wide, which is the same question we started to address in the cash grain. You're suggesting that right now $6 is a fine price for new crop corn. The market obviously says $6 is a fine price for new crop corn because that's what it is, and the market is always right on the day of that market. The question is, does that spread need to change or not?
Yeah. Well, Dan hit one nail right on the head when he said that, you know, this old crop corn carryover is going to be extremely tight. And one of the questions that we'll be asking here is about the ethanol plants actually slowing their crush or making of ethanol, turning the magic corn into ethanol deal is, if you're running a big plant like that, you don't want to run out of corn when the margins could get a lot better during the June, July, August time frame. And I'm sure the companies in the highest levels of the boardrooms are figuring that out and making sure that there's a big inventory of corn. My general impression is that I think that it's two different worlds. And I hear this, that it's bugging a farmer to death that I'm not selling new crop corn because old is so high. And leave that flip of the card to somebody else. You know, don't worry about something that you can't do anything about. You know, my general impression is that, yes, it is going to be hard to come up with 92 million acres, and it's probably Sparks and Forma's group of 91 million acres is enough. We're going to plant the corn crop early. There's going to be some 90-day corn down in southern Illinois. The Canadian National is going to bring corn north. You're going to see barges come up from Memphis on the Mississippi River north. you're going to see all kinds of games and plays in the marketplace that's typical in a very tight carryover year. We'll be running our dryer there at Oakland at 35% moisture corn. You bet, you know, you can just bet on it. So to make a long story short, I don't think the surprise is going to be in the corn acreage. It's going to probably be in a little smaller bean acreage, and that's what's going to make it fun.
The spread.
I don't think the spread matters because, as Babo said, it's two different worlds. We have old crop that's tighter than all get out. If we don't kill the goose that's eating it, you know, by having it going too high, we're going to continue to have good old crop prices. But the new crop is a different thing, and that old crop really has nothing to do with the new crop. So if we don't kill demand with old crop prices, we're going to need a lot of corn for next year. And it'll help those prices on new crop down the road. But if we kill the goose that's been eating all this corn, we don't need as much corn as Mr. Zwicker said for next year, and $6 is a high price for it. So they have nothing to do with each other as far as where the spread is. They have to do with each other is, will old crop prices continue to have demand, or will they go high enough to kill demand, and that will hurt old crop and new crop?
Well, I think one of the things that none of us have talked about so far is the trader's perspective on everything. And I think when you look at the old crop, I agree they're two different worlds from that standpoint, but I don't think you're going to see a big change in the spread until one of two things happens. Either all the old crop corn that they've needed, and all that this spread says to you is how bad they need old crop corn and how much they want to acquire it before we get to that June-July time frame. And so from that standpoint, I think that if you start to see this spread weaken and it's because old crop is falling back, it's telling you that they've acquired probably as much as they need. I don't think that's extremely likely in the near term. And when it comes to new crop, I agree with Dan. I don't think acres mean a darn diddly twink. It's all about yield. We know that from last year. So we can have 93 million bushel or 93 million acres, and if we don't get the yield, we still don't have the crop. So I think when you look at the trade and how they view this spread, you know, they know the demand is there. You can see the demand is there for old crop. They're still hesitant on new crop, and we obviously have not rationed corn at this point in time. So until rationing begins, and a good way to follow that is to follow the poultry industry. It's got the tightest margins of any industry, and egg sets have been tremendous. So we haven't seen rationing at that level. That's the first place you always look for rationing. It isn't there yet. So I think until rationing actually shows up, I don't expect to see this spread mean a whole lot.
On old crop, would you say that you're surprised at this point in time, while we're very high priced on corn, that the market seems to have remained fairly orderly, that we haven't seen anybody back off in a big way yet, whether that be the livestock producer, the exporter, or the ethanol producer in terms of usage, and that it surprises you that a 675 million bushel carryout seems like it might actually work by the time we get to the end of the year? I mean, we're at a high price, but it looks like that high price might make it all the way out. Paul?
To me, the real million-dollar question is, what's China going to do as far as the old crop corn is concerned? There are some reliable sources that feel that China will come into the world market and buy corn. And if that's the case, the timing is going to be extremely important. My general hunch is that if I was a Chinese and needed to buy corn, I'd be in here buying it as the Argentine crop and Brazilian crop would be coming on. And that's where I would pop it in and buy a couple of million, two, 3 or 4 million bushels of tons of corn. As far as the old crop corn, I think the wheat is going to be a situation where there will be some world wheat harvest comes into the equation. Example, Argentine wheat crop, And, of course, we will be watching the European wheat crop with a great deal of closeness as far as what's going to govern the old crop corn price.
We are not going to be sitting September 1st with 675 stocks. Okay. Now,
he didn't say whether it was more or less yet.
It's going to be rare. I mean, unless everything just turns the key off, the market needs another 300 million bushels. Now, either it's going to get it through a very early harvest, so we're going to bring the 11 crop forward, or we're going to have to choke demand 300 million. We are not September 1st stocks. Now, according to USJ's statistics, may show that, but the market needs more than that to operate. So you're either going to have to bring 300 million forward from new crop harvest, so you got to have that number somewhere around a million bushels.
Right, but we did that last fall.
Yeah, we brought her forward.
Right? Well, we did it for 10 or 12 days last fall, and then we lost 150 of it along the way in 10 days.
Well,
but
No, come on.
So,
you know, can I say something?
Yeah.
You know, I went to the USDA meeting in October, okay, and we all know what a debacle the September grain stocks report was. It was a disaster. That's because on their grain stocks report, they don't ask, did you use new crop to replace old crop, or did you use new crop to blend with old crop? And at that point in time, they said there was 330 million more bushels harvested on September 1st this past year that they could not account for. They didn't know where it went to. They accounted for 150 million in feedstocks the beginning of this year. They said feed use for last year is extremely understated. And there's still 180 million floating around out there yet that they haven't accounted for. So what Dan is saying is 1,000% true. We need to bring this. We need to have an extremely good early crop.
You know, guys, I want to make a point here on this one. You know, Jackie, it's wonderful those USDA guys get up in front of the whole world and brag about how smart they are. They knew there was a problem there. Why didn't they say, oh, Mr. Congressman or Mr. Senator, let's correct this accounting procedure so this doesn't happen again? To me, this is cruel to the American farmer.
Yep.
It's cruel to anybody with a brain.
Yep.
And it goes up and shows how bad and antiquated some of our ways are. In
we forgot to.
Well, you want to you want to know why I was at the USDA meeting?
Yeah,
to ask exactly that same question.
Okay.
And we found out that the only way they can change that, we wanted them to move the crop year to July 31st rather than August 31st. So it could never happen again. And there has to be an act of Congress to be able to do it, which is absolutely stupid. So write all your congressmen and get it straightened out.
That's all baloney. They told us that for 20 years in crop insurance when I was in that.
Okay.
And they would say it takes a year and a half to get a change made, and they'd change it overnight and make a new rule.
Well, they can do what they want to, you know.
Well, we're not sure what the USDA and the government can do or can't do, but we'll
talk about it. Let's talk about corn.
But let's talk about corn.
Corn.
One thing, everybody gets too wrapped up in government reports.
Yeah.
Right.
The market knows.
Yeah.
Now, what did the market do with that larger than expected carryover that came in? They traded it for about one day.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
And we continued higher. The trend was
dropped
in
like
place.
A rock and then rolled back up.
Right. So the market knows the supplies. That is what's working every day. That's what's built into the price.
Yes.
The government comes along with its reports once in a while and maybe tries to change the course, and a lot of times it does change the course depending upon which way the market's leaning. But the market always knows whether or not you got supply or not.
Well, let's deal with just new crop. And if anybody got a question they want to ask, I haven't asked you yet. Yeah. Oh, yeah, plenty of them. So we'll start over here in just a second. So deal with new crop is $6 enough, and we'll go across.
I got some candy to give away, too.
All right.
Is that what you're saying? We want to talk about $6 enough?
$6. Is it enough for corn, new crop?
Yes, it is, for where we're at. If you look at the last 2 weeks ago, and then last week, and then this week, We dropped over 30 cents and made it back 2 weeks ago. Last week, we had one day where it was down 27 cents one day and made it back. This week, we're down, I don't know if we're down 27 for the week yet, but we will make it back because of all the outside noise that's out there. But it's not making any new highs either. We haven't made a new high in corn for a long time. That's telling us that where we're at's enough. So what we need to do is protect that price by doing something about it, either selling some cash, buying some puts, but protect. $6 on a cash basis is the best we've ever had, except for two other times in history, and one of them didn't last very long. What did it go to? It dropped $5 in 6 months. If everything went right this year, that could happen again.
$6 December corn is enough. We've been there often enough. If it gets there, do it. Where
well,
you at?
I think when you look at $6 and you look at what input costs are for this year, I think $6 can be considered to be enough. The big question comes down to how do you handle what you do with it. If you're comfortable making sales, you're comfortable with having the insurance levels you have, do it. If you're concerned it's going to go higher, use put strategies. That's what we've been doing a lot of in 2011 and even in some 2012, because the bias and the trend of the market continues to be higher, no matter how you look at it. And the tendency on the producer side is to not make sales when the trend is higher. I've had producers tell me, I've asked them, why don't you sell into an uptrending market? Because I'm afraid I'm going to miss the high. So then why do you sell into a downtrending market? Because I know I already missed the high.
Paul, is $6 for new crop enough?
Oh, we could always stand a couple of cents more, Dan. You know, we're not that crazy, but one of the things that the improver marketing and my good pal from Windsor there, Matt Bennett, made the comment that there is this tendency for people to sell at harvest time and sell ahead of harvest and things like that. Now, you know, that's a good way to play the game, because we don't want to give, pay the farm commercial storage fees. But when you do that, don't forget there is a tool about buying it back. And stop thinking so much about one-dimensional type marketing. Think about the two-dimensional type deal. And it works real good.
If there's anything that I've learned working for ADM in the past 4 years, is when you start thinking like a farmer advisor, you're already in the hole.
And he thought for like a farm advisor for a lot of years.
Don't give him any candy.
No candy for Zwick.
I get a kick of watching the guys out on the trading floor come around the corner and says, well, if I was a farmer, I'd be doing this. If I was a farmer, I'd be doing that. When someone starts thinking like a farmer, the odds are very good they're going to get you short way too soon.
Next question.
You know, I think if you've heard profit once this morning, you've heard it 100 times already.
Mm-hmm.
And there's nothing wrong with that. But there is also opportunity lost in that equation, too.
That's okay.
And you have to find the right balance. And that's a tough question, and I don't necessarily have that answer, but you do have to seek out people of different segments in the commodity world so that you can kind of come up with a moderation of some kind of viewpoint and develop that into your marketing strategy. Now, I'll take myself back to the old market advisory service days, and yes, I'm going to tell you that probably $6, you need to walk into that. I wouldn't necessarily walk into it, you know, full blast, but I do worry about the market, because I the market feels as if there's plenty of cash corn around right now. Yes, it feels heavy. Maybe it's partly because people have been hoarding corn ever since we saw the October report. But, you know, anybody that's been an end user of corn ever since we saw the official numbers basically had to get into a position of cash accumulation, because it's an absolute sin to have a big processing plant or a big feedlot or an ethanol plant, whatever it is that you're running, if you wake up some morning and you don't have any inventory to use, you're going to lose your job. So the industry as a whole has been in the process of trying to accumulate cash corn. And the elevators have been more than willing to move it into the system because of the margin requirements it takes to hold on to $7 corn and $14 beans. So we're kind of in one of these periods that there's plenty of cash around. The question is this cash large enough to take us to September 1st? And that is going to depend upon the spring planting season. But so the market, I think, needs something fresh to come in here on a supply-demand deal. Paul mentioned maybe China at some point in time. Something needs to kind of come in here and motivate it to lift out of this sideways pattern that we're kind of in.
As we teach the rest of the world to farm as we do, what's that going to do to our input prices and grain prices?
He threw me for a second. I didn't catch the beginning of that. He wants to know, as we teach the rest of the world to farm, what happens to grain prices? Well, we've done it with soybeans a long time ago, right? And here we are at
1350. Well, I think that's what the market's all about right now. This is this generation's version of the 70s. It is to send signals throughout the world that we need larger food production, either through increased technology, expansion of new lands, adaptation of new varieties of seeds, encourage the seed people for larger yields. So that's what these higher prices are all about. That's what the 70 prices did. And, of course, 10 years later, we were in the mid-80s. My guess is that is kind of where we're laying the groundwork right now, is to build larger food production base, and at some point in time we'll probably tip the scales on the other side and we'll end up with another mid-80s down the road.
Cargill sold a big potash company, and I wonder if they should have sold something else instead of the potash company. But Margaret Cargill wanted to take her billions, and after she died, and the trust fund reinvested, and that was a clever way they played the game. But it is a deal where a lot of our, unfortunately, a lot of our inputs are affected with what you're saying, because there's no secret, and we do have some tremendous advantages here in the United States called transportation, knowledge, and good farm machinery. So we do have some and farmland and weather. So we do have some advantage, and we're not ready to give up first place yet.
I think that, Dan, you told us earlier, and in the process, as you were talking about $6 and whether it would be enough or not, that the market at this point feels heavy with cash grain. But that by the time we get to, well, March 31st, that we need to know whether we're going to have 300 extra million bushels from the new crop in order to finish.
Or we have more bushels around.
Or we have more bushels from the quarterly grain stocks around. One of those two, right? So,
well, on the question at hand was, input costs are going to continue to go up because we don't control most of those. And one of those is just they're going to charge what the market will bear, because 75% of the cost of anhydrous is natural gas, and natural gas is still way low. But anhydrous is three times more than it was when a natural gas was this price 3 years ago, and it's still that same price. But as far as us teaching the rest of the world, we've already taught them. It's just, will their society let in China farming happen like here? It's happening in Eastern Europe and parts of Russia. You've seen that.
Right.
It has taken over where allowed, but a lot of society in a lot of countries, it's not able to do that at this time. Maybe it will two generations down the road.
Right, and I think when you go beyond, you have to look beyond just the teaching part of it. You have to look at the changes that are going on in the world as far as the change in middle class and the demand for food that there is. You know, and so Pete hit it right on the head. The last I heard, we about 50% of our fertilizer inputs come from outside the United States. So input prices, no doubt, are going to go higher, but the demand situation requires more food everywhere.
I'll make a comment here, and I usually don't, but on this point, teaching the world how to raise crops is much easier than getting them to do it. Getting them to do it depends much more on how land is transferred in ownership, because it's not until people or a farmer or somebody owns that land that it actually becomes really productive. And we can see that case in South America. They privatized the lands, and South America came on in 10 years. Ukraine hasn't, they privatized lands, but you can't sell it. So that hadn't done them any good, so they haven't been able to come back. In India, they have private land, but they have a problem because everybody in the family, in the extended family, 28, 29, 40, 50 people, have to agree to sell it. You know how that goes. So that doesn't work very well either. So they haven't been able to consolidate and make that property really yield. And China, of course, is communist. So trying to bring people up or production in, we probably have the land. Can we make it yield? I think that's a whole different thing, and that has a lot to do with privatization of property and a whole lot to do with democracy. I had a friend who went to one of the former Soviet republics after they fell. He was the guy in college who I thought should have been a communist. He was a first-generation Serbian here in the United States. He worked for Booz and Allen. He changed his mind after he went back, to the homeland. He said he couldn't believe the corruption was there, and then he had this one little tidbit that I pass on occasionally about democracy and about the Soviet Union and communism. He said, you know, it's really easy, and we're seeing this happen right now in the Mideast, it's really easy to overthrow a king. It's really hard to overthrow a people. Okay. I get off my soapbox. Who's got a question out here? Who wants candy? Eric.
Sorry, but I always get my money's worth when I come to these meetings. I ask as many questions as I can. Since we're talking politics, we've got a different attitude now in Congress that they want to start cutting. And if we lose our 50-whatever cents ethanol subsidy, which there's a lot of, 45 now, excuse me, what's that going to do to the corn price? And because it really kind of worries me when 40% of our corn goes to make ethanol. Now, granted, there's DDGs coming out of that, which is another thing altogether. But that's going to make quite a change in things, and that could come within a year. So.
Well, that was one of the things that you saw yesterday in the marketplace. On top of Libya, you saw FAPRI, which is a think tank from Missouri University, come out and say that they were assuming that that's what was going to happen at the end of this year, that they were not going to renew the blender's credit, and they also were that they were going to take away the import tariff that we currently have with Brazil. And that pushed their estimate for our carryout up to almost 1.3 billion bushels. So, you know, if we turn around, well, when ADM talked at that meeting about the $4 to $8 potential, that's where you're at. I mean, there's no doubt. In the current trading environment that we're in, we have a lot of what they call black box trading. What black box trading is, it took the place after the recession. A lot of hedge funds and stuff didn't trust individual people for making decisions. They now have computers that scan the news. They're looking for all those kinds of things, and it instantly says sell or buy based on that. And, you know, as soon as Fabry came out yesterday, we saw a tremendous flood of selling that came into the market. You can't say for sure that's what it is, but from that standpoint, I think you could easily see corn down if that happened. You'll lose a buck out of corn in just moments. You could lose $2, you know, in a couple of days with the expanded limits that we have. So it certainly wouldn't be good, but I think the reality would come back into the market because there's tremendous DDG demand, and just because they take it away doesn't necessarily mean it's going to kill the ethanol industry.
I don't have any questions, but I'll tell you, I'm a farmer from near Toledo, Ohio, so we're on the fringe area. I don't know what price I have for new corn to make me take a cornfield and plant it back to corn. We know how to put soybeans into corn stubble, but we don't know how to put corn back into corn and get a yield. And the second thing is our supplier of nitrogen, Helena, has one of them big tanks that they fill with nitrogen. I don't know how many thousand-gallon holds. He's only filling it half full because 2 years ago he took $1 million hit on that $400 nitrogen. That's 28% nitrogen we have there. And the third thing is I don't know if you should pay attention to the amount of corn that we've got on hand here from the audience, because I think this audience is more in tune with the market than what their neighbors are that aren't here.
Yes.
Thank you.
I agree.
Well, thank you very much. Questions out here? Anybody got a comment on that one? Where are we at here? Right there. Yes, sir. Hang on.
You know, your point that not all ground is compatible on corn is the true statement.
Another thing about acres, our guys have told us we could get 2 to 3 million acres of corn extra out of the Dakotas, but what would the average yield be? And that's where they say some of these corn acres are coming from. It's not going to average 163 bushel. They're lucky to average 100, maybe. Oh, water problems everywhere. Just look at here. I mean, you heard Chuck earlier talk about he's 60 mile, not even 60 mile. What are you, 40, 30 miles from here? And he's going to have trouble planting, he thinks, because of the wet spring. Right. What's that going to do to corn acres? All these outside things have an effect on corn. Our question here is, while before you ask that, is how do we protect the price we've got? That's what we ought to be doing here.
Should the world move to a something, some other instrument other than the dollar as reserve currency? And what specifically would that do to soybeans and more generally my business? And what would I have to wake up and look at in the morning other than out the window for the weather and the price of corn and soybeans?
As I understand it, that's saying if the U.S. dollar is not the number one currency, if they switch it to the euro, what else are we going to have to worry about? Is that the, okay. Any other estimate?
Well, you know, yeah. I want to just say this, that everybody says that's not good for the U.S., and it's probably not good for international grain companies because they do understand how to trade grain in dollars, and they do know how to hedge grain better and the currency trading and pay for everything in dollars. So that does give us a benefit. My general impression is that I bet it's longer, further down the road than you might think as far as actually losing that.
Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, one of the things is, you know, when you read some of the articles, they make it sound like it would be so easy to do. I think one of the difficulties is that when you look at crude oil is priced in American dollars across the world. It's not priced in their current currency. It's priced in U.S. dollars. And so the implications that would come out of changing to another currency like going to the euro exit would have a tremendous impact on global economy. So I agree with Paul. I think it's quite a ways down the road. It's going to have to you know, it's just like talking about reducing an ethanol mandate and saying let's drop the mandate. Well, what does that do to gasoline prices? What does that do to the economy on the other side? So it's the same thing with the currency.
Let's come back to this $6 corn mark. So I think I had everybody say that $6 was enough. Still, we need to know how to protect that sale. So let's protect it.
And we were talking about right now. As Mr. Zwicker said, down the road, that might not be true. Mm-hmm. But right now, the market's telling us that's enough. But right. How do we protect it?
Right now, the market says $6 is enough. It keeps going to it, bounces back off, and goes down. Pete, why don't you start? How are you going to protect it?
Well, I'm either going to sell cash and buy a call to replace it, or I'm going to buy puts on what I don't have sold. I'm definitely going to buy crop insurance and have that protected there so I don't have to protect as much.
I'm going to take a little different approach. Grain storage on the farm is tremendous. And a lot of people say, I want to, you know, make my next investment. And if you are a large landowner building a large bin and actually going and lining up the credit to do your own hedging is the most economical and probably dollars and cents way to play the game. So that's the trend I see. And when you do go to that lender, he has to have some tremendous pockets.
Yeah, so use the money you have, build a grain elevator, go see the banker, talk about margin, and then hedge with Cooley, right?
Well,
then talk about hedging, then?
Any of our family here.
Well, yeah, and yeah. Dan?
First thing, I want to make a correction on what Jackie says. ADM does not have a position. Now, ADMIS might have a position. Okay. ADM.
Yes, you're correct. It's ADMIS. It was actually Steve Fried who said it.
Okay.
So.
I am a believer in. I think a minimum maximum contract can kind of work somewhat in your favor. They are basically an option strategy that's embedded into a cash contract at your local elevator. And one approach would be, I think, to buy a $6 put. Then you could maybe sell a $7.50 call to kind of cheapen up that downside protection. Now, basically what that does is you've kind of sold your corn for $6 futures and below. But if you deliver that grain come November and prices are at $7, then you're able to take advantage of $7 minus your basis and whatever the option fees were at that time. If it was $7.50, you get $7.50. But if it goes to $9, you're capped off at $7. So as long as you understand that, now those kind of strategies are not very good at rolling up in the middle of a crop scare in July. If you're one that wants to kind of put a floor under you and then have the opportunity if the market goes higher and you want to roll that put up, then you basically need to just pay the higher price for the put. And as if the market goes up, you can roll it up. If the market goes down, you can roll it down. But, you know, there are ways to trade options that can be very beneficial. But you have to study and do the work. So I think if you put a $6 floor on, you put a $7.50 cap, my guess is that you won't miss the market more than a buck and a half. But given the market advisory crowd have already missed it by three.
I like Dan because now we have $300 million. We have a $3 spread because you can't miss it for a buck and a half one way or the other, right? Okay. And Jackie.
Pretty good. I truly believe that cash is always king, and I'd like to see doing a combination of things. And I think in a market like this, you have to look to cash first if you've made no cash sales. Evaluate whether you consider that basis to be good or not. I think this year we have to be careful about how much we sell for too early a delivery, just in case we have a bad weather situation and you can't make the delivery. Because if we are tight for corn, it's going to be a tough situation. They don't want your cash. They're not going to roll a contract. They want your corn. But I think in any marketing environment, you can do a combination of things. You can do some cash. In this market, because we continue to trend higher, do puts. And then when the market gives us the indication, and we will find a high at some point in time, use futures if you don't feel confident about making cash sales. But at this point in time, I think the best approach is always. You know, futures and options are just a tool in your toolbox. That's all they are. They're just like a lug wrench. You use it once in a while, but you know how to use it, and it's there if you need it. And that's all this is.
I think once in a while we also get hung up on selling cash about how wide or narrow the basis is. I can still remember back in 08, one of my customers didn't sell any corn when it was at 6 and at 7 and at 8 because the basis was 2 cents too wide, and he sold it all for $3 later. Look at the flat price. If I take the Chicago price minus the basis, where's that flat price at? Look at that. I mean, don't get so hung up on the basis that you killed a cow and forgot everything else that went with it. Flat price is more important than basis.
That's really the truth. And I think a good rule of thumb to use for basis, you know, if you think back to when we had $2 corn, we had a 20-cent basis a lot. That's about 10% of the value of a bushel. If you look at basis right now, if you'd be at 10% of the value of a bushel on corn, you'd have 60-cent basis and $1.30 on beans. So you have to be careful about hesitating to make sales due to that. And to the comment that calls are too expensive or puts are too expensive, if you look back and you roll back to when we had $2 corn, on puts, you could figure about 12.5% of the value of a bushel. If you sit down and pencil new crop corn right now, you're looking at around 12.5% of the value of a bushel. So times have changed.
Just enough time for a very short comment from Paul, Pete, and Jackie.
Okay. There was a lot of talk about crop insurance, and it's a wonderful tool. I've never seen a farmer pay for a farm with crop insurance, but it helps him from losing it once he has it bought.
Pete, final word?
These are historically high prices, no matter how much they go up or down on any given week. We should be protecting those prices or cashing in on those prices or doing something besides just sitting there worrying about where they're going to go next or what my basis is.
And Jackie.
I think, you know, we can talk about anything we want to. The most important thing is that you have a plan for what if the market goes higher or what if the market goes lower. You each know your individual situation, and that to me is the bottom line. Look at what you're doing, not what everybody else is doing, and have a plan.
I hope you had as much fun listening to that as I did. Give these folks a nice round of applause.